Welcome to Risk Rustlers, where we celebrate the extraordinary journeys of modern-day risk leaders who embrace the art of grustle, a powerful fusion of grind and hustle. Our podcast dives into the innovative strategies and bold decisions taken by these risk takers, shaping the future of cybersecurity and risk management. Join us as we explore their inspiring stories, insightful advice, and the cutting-edge technologies that define the alternative GRC landscape. Welcome everyone to yet another episode of Risk Rustlers. Today we have Jason with us. And Jason has been, and he spent a career doing GRC, which is nice and interesting. And he's seen GRC evolve from the 90s, from the Stone Ages. And he's seen this evolve across the last 20 years. And risen through the ranks, become the GRC head at a very sexy company like Starbucks. And then eventually decided to move away from GRC and become an executive coach. And he's been doing great at it. So, Jason, would really love to understand your journey around what is it that you saw? What patterns did you observe that are not visible to the naked eye that prompted you to make that shift? It's a bit of an unorthodox shift. So would really love to understand your journey there.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Ayush, for having me. What I had been thinking about for quite a while, probably 10 years, is that there's a crunchy side to risk management. Things are hard and abrasive, and big obsession with frameworks and tools, and kind of telling people what to do. And what I had found is that there's just been very little attention paid to the softer side of risk or the human side of risk, and how things like company culture, how systems and teams within a company culture, within an organization, help or hurt risk management efforts, especially if you're coming from a crunchy angle. So I had definitely been playing in the crunchier side, so kind of a little obsessed with.
So that's about 20 years of playing crunchy, right?
Absolutely. Like lots of time spent in crunchy land over the last 20 years, just in technical realms, technical domains.
Yeah.
I love the technical side of things, the technical side of GRC. I'm fascinated by new and emerging approaches to do things a little smarter, a little easier, a little less abrasive. But even coming from that crunchy side where I'd been thinking about, like, you know, how can we make risk management more quantitatively sound? How can we put numbers to everything? How can we prove with data that we are in a specific uncomfortable risk posture that we shouldn't be in and we need to move away from? And spending time, spending energy doing things like that, it took me away personally from actually understanding what was important to people.
Yeah.
What were these people and teams going through that was difficult, that they were afraid of, that they may have been nervous about, that affected their risk decisions? It affected our risk conversation together. And maybe we have some listeners that have felt the same way, where
I was going to break that up, because this I'm sure is going to touch a nerve with a lot of our viewers. And so if I could just go a little deeper and request you to characterize and exemplify what that soft and squishy side of risk management really entails, I think that would be super helpful for our viewers.
So I talk about the softer side of risk. I'm really referencing the human side. Oftentimes we talk about soft skills. I don't really like the term soft skills because there's nothing really soft about them. They're hard.
Yeah, but if a cliche, no. Yeah.
Most people have a tough time with quote-unquote soft skills because it's the human side. We tend to think that people are just born with them. They're born with the ability to communicate. They're born with the ability to build relationships, when actually these are skills that we can study and understand and develop and grow capacity in.
Yeah.
And I think your question was, what are some of the elements of that softer side that make a big difference, or patterns that I had seen? Yeah. So some of the strongest patterns that I've noticed that I talk about with the software side. So I've given presentations on this idea. I'm going to be building a manifesto that talks about a number of these different items. And I also do and touch on some of this and even GRC assessment work that I still do occasionally. I don't do a lot of it, but depending on the circumstance and the type of project and the client, I might get involved and do a larger GRC assessment. But so we touch on some of these things. So one is when there's a strong notion of knowing versus learning, that's usually a good indicator that we're probably hanging out on the crunchy side a little too heavily.
What would be some examples of situations where there was, are you seeing a trade-off between knowing and learning, and what were the interventions that you made?
Yeah. So running into maybe CISOs or executive risk professionals that are just, they're just frustrated by knowing, no one listening to them. Why don't people get it? Why do I have to repeat myself 5-10 times? And when we really start to unpack that and understand approaches and what's going on for them personally,
yeah.
There's, as risk professionals, we have this overwhelming fear of not being right. Because oftentimes people look to us for the answers to address the things that we fear, those risks, those bad things that could happen. And so coming from a place of thinking that we know everything, I've got framework, I've got an analysis method, I know how to assess this, I know exactly what controls to tell you what to do, I know exactly where all the failures are, the deficiencies, all the problems, got it all laid out. But what I've seen is that we fail to ask questions to understand a bit more deeply what has made this difficult for that team or this culture to make certain risk decisions or to advance down a path that they really want to address some common or systemic risks that, you know, maybe they've been staring at for the last number of years and they just haven't been able to make any headway.
And also, I think one of the things that we've seen across several of our companies too, right? So because risk management and most companies, unless they reach a certain scale and threshold, chances are they wouldn't have a dedicated or a very sophisticated risk management team. Now, for a mid-sized company, where the CISO or the VP of information security is essentially doing a risk management activities, driving that change throughout the organization is something that often becomes a very frustrating experience for them, because they need to get buy-in from the various teams. They need to get buy-ins from the HR team, the DevSecOps team, the AppSec teams, the development teams. And when the risk assessment activity is being carried out, that is perceived as an overhead. But when there is an incident, then the fall has to be taken by the CISO. And we see that create a significant degree of frustration.
Absolutely. You know, so I understand what defender's dilemma is.
Yeah.
And I understand that CISOs and risk professionals bring that with them in a little bag that they carry every day to work. They're personally nervous that the risk or the attacker only has to be right once. And I, as the risk professional, feel like I need to be right all the time. But you just said something that came to mind for me, which comes up quite a bit. And you use this word buy-in.
Yeah.
And I talk to professionals all the time and about this sort of thing. And the comment that usually comes up is like, I just need these people to buy in. I don't know why they won't buy in.
Yeah.
And so I wonder to them, like, what are you hoping for them to do in terms of buy-in? Do you want them to just listen to you? Do you want them to do exactly what you tell them to do? Well, when we sit back and we really think about what buy-in is, when someone usually comes to us and they say, like, you know what, I just need you to buy in to this. Usually that feels like an ultimatum.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have choice. And what we talk about is there's a difference between weigh-in and buy-in.
Go ahead.
And weigh-in always has to happen before buy-in. So if we're not taking the time to, one, ask questions and understand the other side a little bit and allow them an opportunity to weigh in on what we're trying to influence them on and quote unquote, achieve buy-in with them, then they feel like they don't have a say in the direction that they're going to be taking, you know, even from a risk perspective. So I think that's also something that contributes to this crunchy side, is like this absence of allowing people to weigh in on their risk destiny. We don't let that happen. And we expect buy-in, which usually results in some sort of defensive behavior or people sending signals that, you know, not interested, shut down. They don't want to listen. They don't want to play a part, or they might do things to just completely go against some of the things that we're trying to promote.
Yeah. And what are some of the situations that you've observed where a GRC professional who is extremely strong on the crunchy side is able to understand to a fair degree of specificity what risks the organization would face? But then there is a follow-on action to that for carrying out some of the mitigating tasks or mitigating actions. They might need to get a budget approved. They might need to change behaviors across teams. They might need to track an array of mitigating tasks. How does that process look like? I mean, because there has to be it can't be too esoteric, because if it's too esoteric, if it's too jazzy, people would not perceive it. It doesn't remain actionable anymore. So what kind of interventions have you had to do with some of the people that you work with?
Well, no matter what sort of intervention is chosen by the client, because I'm not choosing what they do. They need to choose what they're going to do.
Got it.
It always comes back to what is difficult for them.
Yeah.
What's difficult about this for you? Not for anyone else. You know, we're not able to change people and teams as much as we want to. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So how are you personally contributing to this situation? How is difficulty or challenge showing up for you? Oftentimes maybe some common interventions or common changes that these leaders are seeking for themselves is getting more comfortable with asking questions to understand perspectives from the other side, from across the table, from another team, a different audience. Maybe it's talking to a person that really just doesn't understand the risk management program as it's been relayed to date. Or maybe just doesn't understand risk management and the part they play in it as a whole. So being okay with learning about people versus knowing what they need to do, having that strong sensation of like, oh, I already know what you need to do.
Yeah.
And by doing that, you're on a very fixed path, which is usually alienating to other people. So the change that sometimes leaders will want to make is like, how do I move from this fixed, controlled mindset to more of a gross, expansive, flexible, adaptable mindset? And then what are the small practices or things that I can do to help me move from fixed to gross, or from inflexible to flexible, or from control to negotiating with people and teams? That's one common change.
Jason, as you would have engaged with a lot of folks all these years, and I don't intend to oversimplify years of research in the subject, but if you had to talk about the three most common, very basic interventions that you see yourself having to do over and over again, sort of where the journey to developing a softer side of risk management begins, what would those three interventions be? If you had to pick three.
Okay, if I had to pick three. Well, the one that comes to the top of the stack, by far, it's the easiest one to think about, is to start small. And start small applies not only to us understanding ourselves a bit better, like boosting our self-awareness, which is so, so powerful as a leader, but also at any sort of change that we want to affect, or program tweaks, or any sort of adjustment we want to make, change about ourselves or change we want for the culture or organization we're with, start small. I promote a lot of the time 1% gains. What's a 1% gain or 1% improvement that we can make about ourselves, or that we can promote or affect or influence within our culture of organization. Because change is hard.
Absolutely.
There's no two ways about it. Change is difficult for everybody.
Yeah.
The second one would be listening versus talking. So listening versus talking, and that somewhat relates to the earlier comment about learning versus knowing, but listening versus talking and understanding and being cognizant of how often we are listening versus how often we are talking or speaking at people or presenting the greatest idea ever. How much time are we spending listening and understanding what it's like to be a control owner? How often are we listening and gathering insight and information from control performers? What's it like to walk a day in their shoes?
Yeah.
What's up with the deficiencies and the exceptions? What's going on for them? Where's the struggle? Where's the challenge? And then stepping back and listening. Pausing and waiting to listen, to understand a bit more about what is challenging for them in this risk role that they play.
And I think the absence of that, any control would become an academic exercise.
Absolutely. Yeah, which it often is, which is why control ownership and control management is typically a super crunchy function because it's a lot of throwing controls over a fence, hoping for the best, and then wondering why controls aren't working so well quarter over quarter or year over year.
Got it. And what would be the third?
I think the third change that many seek to grow in themselves and get a little more comfortable with is the idea of empathy versus collusion. And that to be empathetic towards someone else, to understand what it's like to walk a day in their shoes without actually wearing them, is not the same as colluding with someone. And that it's okay to build a relationship with them, to get to know them, to understand them. And that doesn't put us in a position to where we're cheating. There's no cheating in risk management. Risk management function is a helping function.
Yeah.
We should be there to assist and serve if we can. So if empathy is absent from our approach, it's going to be much more difficult to tap into that human side of all of this and just understanding what it's like. And also this idea of empathy versus collusion, helping us as leaders acknowledge, understand, recognize that everyone's job is hard.
Yeah.
Everyone's job is hard. And everyone is showing up every day hoping to do a good job. We're all just showing up trying to do a good job. So if we can bring more empathy into our work to try and understand people a little bit better, it's going to take us, we're going to go a longer way in making the change happen that we hope for.
Good. That's super powerful, Jason. Why don't you just lead out in very simple terms, is I'm sure it will resonate with a lot of our viewers. So, and I'm sure a lot of them would want to follow up with you. So what's the best way to reach you? Can you talk a little bit about your practice, how you typically engage, what are the various models for the benefit of our viewers, and they could choose to follow up with you subsequently.
Yeah, I founded a practice called Kinko, KINKOU. You can find more about that practice at kinko.org, KINKOU.org. You can reach out to me directly to jason@kinko.org. And I'm looking to work with leaders who are interested in change and are willing to do hard work, because change is hard, but it's super meaningful. And it's usually the difference between a leader being able to, or just any professional being able to do more and feel good about it, versus what's been done for years, at least in this industry, where we stay crunchy. We ignore the human, emotional, softer side of this whole thing, this whole job that we're doing.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been as effective as it could be, because We're talking about risk, which is no one's love language. We're naturally talking about fear, which no one really loves to talk about. So how can we adjust ourselves so that we can warm up to them and they can warm up to us and we can do better work together?
Perfect. Thanks for sharing that, Jason. And for our viewers, you know how to reach Jason. You know how to reach us. Thanks again for viewing this episode of Risk Rustlers. We'll be back soon. Bye-bye.